I'm going to do a real big jump here, and let's talk about nutrition a little bit. Let's talk about your current eating habits, and I'd like to know your thoughts on supplements, food supplements, and all I got to do is give you a topic, and you can run with it.
Well, as far as actual, people are very confused about diet in this country. It's really interesting to me that people don't know how to feed themselves. I mean, if you think about it, people are usually pretty good at feeding their pets, although, you know, usually they feed them denatured, you know, pet food store stuff. But, you know, a lot of people will feed their dogs or their cats or their animals and so forth better than they feed themselves. And, you know, your pet starts getting fat, well, you don't feed it as much. You don't put as much food in the bowl. I kept cats. And one of my cats lived to almost 19 years old. And, we systematically underfed that cat. And it would get one bowl of food. And the second it walked away from the food, we would clean it up and take it away. And she didn't get to eat more than just one little bowl per day. And then sometimes we would feed her only once every other day. So she was in what we call, you know, like a systematic under-eating stage.
Okay.
And of course, that really increased her sharpness and her hunting instincts. And she was an amazing little hunter. Great mouser, amazing at getting birds and so forth. Well, the same thing would be true for humans, you know. Most people eat way too much, too often, and their whole mind is always concentrating on food, always thinking about their next meal. And that's... You know, that being trapped into that whole sensuality of food and pleasure and taste and all that kind of stuff, it's a bad way to live. I personally systematically underfeed myself. I try to leave the table always feeling like a little, like I could eat more, like be a little bit hungry. And it's interesting because the Okinawans are the oldest living people in the world right now, right in there with the Icarians in Greece. It's like one of the blue zones. But one of the secrets of the Okinawan's health and well-being and longevity is the fact they call it the 80% rule. They will only eat to about 80% and leave the table feeling like they want more. And I've been doing that for quite a while. The other problem, people eat too often. You know, they're in a chronic state of digestion. Your digestive system expends a lot of energy, it takes up a lot of energy, vital energy, digesting your food. So people that are eating every couple hours are in a chronic state of digestion. The digestive organs actually get overworked. So it's important to have 4 or 5 hours between each meal. Make sure that you have a really keen hunger before you go to that next meal. And then the third problem I find with nutrition, especially in the United States, but also in the developed countries in Europe, people, it's what I call overcrowded nutrition. They have too much food in their plate. They mix too many things together. The digestive system is so burdened, there's no possible way that it can break down and assimilate all the nutrients that they need. So what I do to help unburden my digestion is I make my meals quite simple. I'll have a fruit-based meal, occasionally with a little bit of dairy product, such as a yogurt or maybe a cottage cheese with the fruit. I'll have a starch-based meal, and I'll have a protein and vegetable-based meal, usually a protein food such as meat, eggs, chicken, with a salad, and maybe a couple cooked vegetables, but non-starchy vegetables. For starch, I'll have anything for crackers, well-toasted bread perhaps. I like sweet potatoes, something like that. If I find that I'm starting to put on unwanted weight, which happens occasionally, you know, I'll cut the starch out and I'll do a second fruit-based meal. And usually with the fruit, it's anything in season. Try to get organic if I can. And I am very fond of berries, berries of all types, raspberries, blueberries, strawberries, blackberries, you know. So I love berries. Occasionally I'll have melon. I like watermelon or cantaloupe, and I'm not real keen on bananas or citrus food, although occasionally I'll have a few oranges. But that's the way I eat, and I feel fantastic, and you know, I'm pretty lean. I maintain a below 8% body fat year round pretty much effortlessly, even though I travel full time. And, you know, there's not an animal in this world, Bill, that needs a supplement. You know, nature provided the perfect diet for every creature on this earth. If you go out anywhere, you know, let's say we go out in nature and we look at like a wolf or a badger or a grizzly bear or an otter, right? Any kind of bird, you'll find that they have everything they need in their natural environment. Well, we're the highest of all creatures, supposedly. And why wouldn't the same thing hold true for man? There's no reason in the world why we would need to supplement what nature's already provided. The problem, you know, with the whole supplement thing is people don't eat the way they should. So they think that somehow by taking these supplements, they can make up for a bad diet. It's simply not true. That's the great lie. This is the lie that the hucksters have tried to pull over and hoodwink people into believing that somehow that if they have a crappy diet, that they can make up for it by taking these so-called supplements. It's simply not true. And your health won't improve. So people just got to knuckle down and learn to feed themselves right. And, you know, I mean, I like the taste of food. You know, I enjoy eating and so forth. But just too many people out there are living for the meals. You know, they're living to eat. I always believe that you should eat to live. My whole concept is to try to eat to make myself as healthy and functional as possible. And degenerative disease is definitely linked to bad diet. And to load one system with denatured, devitalized food, you know, this and sweets and candies and pies and cakes and ice creams, and, you know, sure, it tastes delicious, but it's basically a poison. So it's to me, it's crazy. And it's just a matter of just learning to be disciplined. Unfortunately, people just grow up, especially in the U.S., with no physical discipline whatsoever.
I'm going to hit you with two things. One, just real quickly, in your protein sources, you used a word that a lot of people are afraid of, meat. And secondly, when Steve Maxwell decides he wants just to splurge, just has a craving for, what's the garbage that you do eat?
Well, there's nothing wrong with meat. I mean, you know, my girlfriend is a pretty devout vegetarian. You could almost say vegan most of the time, although she will occasionally have an egg or dairy product. But for the most part, she's devout. And, you know, she has no problem with me having meat. The key is just to eat not that much of it. As long as you're not, you know, you can do anything upon occasion. And as long as you're not overeating anything, you'll be fine. You know, this term moderation, I don't know what's happened in the country. It's like everyone is just so extreme with everything. It's either all or nothing. It's black or white, you know?
It's gone the way of common sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, for sure, you can enjoy some meat, you know. I don't have it every day. I don't base my whole, you know, meal system on meat. But, you know, a few times a week, I'll have meat. I have no problem with it. I have no ethical concerns about eating animals and so forth. Some people do. I respect that. But, you know, for me, you know, it's a pretty well-designed diet. You know, having a fruit-based meal, starch-based meal, and protein-based meal makes it pretty easy. And I'll just eat whatever protein is available at that time. Most people, most athletes, way over-consume protein. That was another idea that's been put in people's minds with the hucksters. The hucksters would have you believe that you need all these supplemental protein powders and you need to gouge the protein and this and that and the other thing. But it's simply not true. Certainly not for health. Now, for a young man trying to put on muscle mass, and listen, Bill, no one ever said building big muscles is healthy, by the way. You know, if you look at nature, you know, like let's say on the farm, your stud animals, like your stud stallion or your stud bull, you know, those animals have the shortest lifespans. They die quite faster than the other animals. So, you know, these show dogs and so forth, they do not have long lifespans. So, yeah, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be big and muscular and looking good. But no one ever said that it's particularly healthy or good for you. So realize that in order to develop these big gee-whiz muscles and physiques, you're taking away vital energy and you're shaving years off the end of your life. And look, a long life of not doing anything, that doesn't mean much either. So, you know, I'd say, hey, as long as you're understanding what you're doing and you're consciously aware of these decisions and choices, then okay, go for it. But don't think that you're doing something that's good for you. You're not. And eating a lot of protein is not good for you. And, you know, if there's enough research that shows that increasing protein slightly can definitely help you build muscle mass, but no more than maybe 20% of what you would normally eat. Gouging yourself with protein, like a lot of these companies would have you believe, is complete nonsense. It's just going to make you sick.
Okay, and the second question I asked you, when Steve's having a craving.
Oh, yeah, binge food?
Yeah.
I like movie theater popcorn, actually, to tell the truth. Yeah, I like to, like, I don't know, it's just a nice big bag of popcorn. And I don't put butter on it or anything. It's fatty enough by itself. It's not even the popcorn that or anything it's so bad, but the freaking salt. I try to, you know, some of the movie theaters are actually get pretty good about the salt. And the thing I like in Europe, they have that sweet corn. It's kind of like a lightly sweetened type popcorn. Quite delicious. They serve it in the UK and Australia and certain countries in Europe. It's like a nice sweet taste, kind of like Cracker Jacks, but not quite that sugary. So okay. Yeah, that's a little treat I'll give myself now and again. But okay. For the most part, I don't really crave junk that much. Every once in a blue moon, you know, I'll get a taste for ice cream or something or whatever, but it's pretty rare. And when I do it, that's my meal. I'll make a whole meal of it. That would be my meal that I won't eat again for, you know, 5 hours or so.
So you just...
If I felt like I overeat, occasionally at a restaurant or something, a social event, I may have a tendency to overeat a little bit of the food that's there, and sometimes I'll fast the next day and I just want to eat anything just to balance it out a little bit. I'm going to get through my system.
So when you fast, just water?
Yes. Occasionally I'll do a juice fast. Juice fasts are actually pretty easy. That's raw, fresh juice made from a juicer.
What kind of juices do you tend to use?
Anything. I don't know. Anything. I like carrot, beet, apple, you know. I like some of the green juices, you know. Usually my girlfriend's a real pro when it comes to nutrition, and she really helps me out a lot. She actually pretty much tends to most of my food needs, and she'll bring juices back and so forth. I really like New York City because there's like a juice press on almost every corner. Really easy to get juices. That's a great place to do your juicing and juice fasts or cleanses and stuff.
I was thinking.
I mean, well, one of the things I did learn, if people really want to cut down on the amount of food they eat, you got to chew your food up. Most people don't chew. I mean, I'll go to restaurants sometimes with friends or I'll share a meal. They'll be finished before I'm even done with a third of what I got. I mean, I chew my food to liquid. I mean, literally where I could squirt it between my teeth. And I find that, man, that makes you feel so much more satisfied. And whatever nutrients are in there, you can assimilate so much better when you chew your food up. No wonder people feel like they need supplements. You know, they're gouging themselves with this food. They're eating every couple hours. They're in a chronic state of digestion, but yet they digest nothing, so they're not absorbing the nutrients that they need, so then they end up with deficiencies. A lot of this food is partially digested, so you get these partially digested food molecules passing through the gut membrane, causing all sorts of inflammatory response, inflammation, osteoarthritis. You know, they wonder why the joints are killing them. It's all due to poor digestion and poor assimilation. Once you start chewing your food up, you'll find that you eat about half of what you normally eat.
Well, I was going to ask you if you had difficulty sticking to your diet based on your lifestyle and all the travel, but I keep hearing whatever there is. So it sounds like you're very flexible, and whether you're in Turkey or Oslo or Hawaii, it's not a problem for you to eat.
Well, you just eat what the local people eat. But the key for me is, and one of the biggest, the reason I adopted the fruit-based meal, the starch-based meal, the protein-based meal, one of the worst combinations you can possibly have, this is called food combining, is to mix starches and proteins together. For example, a sandwich, like a meat sandwich or a cheese sandwich, that's a filthy thing to put into your body. You can't digest that whatsoever. I mean, you can, but it's really hard to digest. It's you're just overburdening and overtaxing your system by putting these abominations into your body. People sitting there with a steak, and then they're having rice or potatoes, and then they'll have like three or four different vegetables, and then they'll have a salad. Then they'll be drinking a beer or wine. And then afterwards, they'll have a dessert, you know, like a chocolate fudge brownie with ice cream or something. I mean, I see it all the time. And then they wonder why they're fat, and they wonder why they feel like crap when they finish their meal, and why their stomachs feel so bloated, and why they have gas that night later in bed. I mean, you know, it's just the way that they're eating. They're not eating a simple diet. Sometimes I'll actually have a mono diet where I just eat one food in a meal. Like after I get done with you, I'm going to have my lunch, and it's just going to be these Norwegian crackers, like these seed crackers, and I'm just going to sit here and have a bag of those crackers, and I'm going to chew them to liquid, and then I'm not going to eat again for, you know, about 4 or 5 hours, and tonight I'm just going to have some fruit before I go to bed. I got these awesome Turkish figs.
What was your protein meal this morning?
I had 6 soft-boiled eggs and 3 pieces of Swiss cheese with tomatoes and bell pepper and cucumbers. That was my morning meal. Well, I had that at 10 o'clock.
Well, you definitely aren't starving yourself. 6 whole eggs is a healthy meal, then adding the rest of that on top of it.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of protein. I don't need any more protein for the day. It's not like I'm still competing in sports or anything anymore.
No, that's a good amount right there. I'm curious if you'll have an answer to something I observed. My wife and I were in Italy, Turkey, Greece in 2006 and again in 2009. And I was observing people, and then I asked her to confirm because I obviously don't see so good, so I figured I might miss something. Other than the other American tourists, we didn't see any overweight people.
No, you don't. It's quite interesting. Americans are the fattest, least fit people on the planet, followed by the Germans and the people in the UK. You see some pretty rotund people in England now. And I've been going to Iceland for years, and man, the Icelandic people were some of the finest looking people I'd ever seen. Just great structure, great bone structure, good looking people. But the last few years, you're seeing a lot of fatties. All the, a lot of American fast food companies have moved in there, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Burger King, Subway has made inroads all over the world. As soon as you start to see those fast food restaurants and, with the denatured high-calorie, high-fat foods, you start to see people beginning to get fatter and fatter and fatter. And, when I'm in Europe and Asia, you rarely will see really obese people, almost never. Even Australia. Even though it's a pretty developed country, you just don't see fat people like you do in the States. And when they are fat or overweight, they carry it fairly well because their structures are pretty good. They have good sound structures. So
it amazed me that even in France, where the diet is cheese and cream-based sauces and lots of wine and very rich food, there didn't seem to be very many really overweight people.
Well, they don't eat that much of it. They just pick around it. I watch them sit in the restaurant. They'll have a few bites and leave half of it on the plate a lot of times. Or the portions are really tiny. And, so they don't overeat. those type of rich foods. It's never the food itself per se. It's always the calories. It's the amount. People always want to argue about quality of food, and you know, there's this argument out there that certain types of calories will store as fat much more quickly than others. I haven't seen any evidence to support that. I mean, a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. I mean, I suppose certain foods may lend themselves to being stored as body fat a little bit easier than others, but it always comes back to amounts, the amount of food that you're putting into your body. And I walk around with a Fitbit tracker. I don't know whether you've heard of these things. Mm-hmm. They're pretty popular. So I know how many steps I get, how many kilometers I walk every day, how many calories basically I'm burning. I have a pretty good idea in that. And so I just shift my intake according to my outtake. So I like to know how active I've been each day. So I keep pretty strong tabs in that. And I am a calorie counter. I will look at the calorie content and packages and the fat to protein carbohydrate ratio. So at least I'm aware of what I'm putting into my body. And, if it's too imbalanced or whatever, I'll shun that particular product. I won't take it. I won't eat it.
Okay. That leads me to, I realize your activity levels vary from day to day, but approximately on the average, how many calories in a day do you consume?
Usually about 2,100 calories, depending on how active I am. But, for my activity level and my a man my size and so forth, I find that if I eat much more than that, I start putting on the weight. And there are times I'll eat less than that, especially if I'm inactive, like flying, for example, a prolonged flight. I take some pretty long flights. We flew from Los Angeles to Oslo. That was a long flight. But, we've taken flights from Australia, which no matter where you go from Australia, it's a long flight. So,
okay, you said a man your size. What's your height and weight, Steve?
I'm 5'8", about 163 pounds.
Oh, okay, so you're not a big guy.
No, not at all. At one point when I was heavily involved with training, I used to be as high as 178, and I've trimmed down a bit, and I feel better, a little bit slimmer, a little less bulky. I just feel, more mobile and, just a little bit more spry.
It's interesting. All the experts always say somewhere between 12 to 15 calories per pound of body weight to maintain, and you're right in that zone.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's just, I never planned it that way. It's just what I discovered.
Just worked out that way. So somebody must know what they're talking about when they came up with those numbers.
Yeah, well, I think so. So usually I'll try to steer, each meal somewhere between 600 to 1,000 calories. I'll never have more than 1,000 calories in a meal.
That can be a lot of fruit.
Well, if I do have a 1,000-calorie meal, then I'll only have two meals that day.
It's kind of hard to hit 1,000 calories in a pure fruit meal, I would guess.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. although, if you had a little Greek yogurt with that, that could put you over pretty quick.
Well, that half-dozen boiled eggs and cheese and so on this morning sounds like that would be pretty close to it.
Yeah, eggs are not that high in calories, but... the cheese, for sure.
And I'm sure that cheese was delicious, not like anything we get here.
It was quite good. And I'll tell you, the food in Europe is fantastic. You don't have the variety. You don't walk into a supermarket and you're not knocked off your feet and overwhelmed. That's one of the things I do like. I think in America, when people from other countries go to an American supermarket, they're just blown away. They just can't believe the row after row after row of foods. I was in, where was I? I went into a Walmart. It was like one of the super Walmarts. And it was like just the food section was just overwhelming. I mean, this is like a vast warehouse of just every kind of breakfast cereal imaginable in this place. I would say probably about 3/4 of the food was inedible. I mean, not the kind of stuff that you would ever want to eat, just over-processed crap, at least three quarters of it, you know? I mean, just the cake and Twinkie aisle, you know, and the cookies and the potato chips and the Cheetos and all this stuff. It's just unbelievable. And people from other countries, they don't have any of this stuff at all. You go into any Norwegian store, even a supermarket, they're rather smallish. They just have a few rows. You only have maybe just like a few of each product, and it's extremely high quality. Like every it's almost like every store is like a health food store. You find this in Germany, Austria in particular. Every store is like a health food store. You know, the food is of the best quality here in Norway, and I've been to Denmark and Sweden, same thing. They just don't have this huge variety. I've been to Russia four times, and even the Russians eat better than the Americans do. They don't have much variety at all, but people aren't starving there like American media would have you believe. They'd have you believe that they're really suffering and the people, you know, live really crappy lives. That's not true at all. They live actually pretty good. I mean, I like Russia, you know. I could live in Russia easy. I mean, I'd be very happy to live that type of more, it's a much more simple lifestyle.
Well, I think you would have the authority to comment on other places considering how much you've traveled. Now, I had a question and I lost it completely.
Well, I just wanted to mention, you know, I mentioned the media. People should, your listeners, stop believing in the news. The news, it's all mostly innuendo, exaggeration, lies. They like to, you know, people love to be terrified. Otherwise, monster movies and scary movies would never exist. You know, obviously, roller coaster rides would not exist, you know. People seem to love thrills and chills and to be frightened. And, of course, the media is just another form of that type of fright. And people just love to read this bad news and these bad stories. It's almost all hype and lies. And everything we're reading about these countries, about Putin and the Ukraine and Russia or whatever, it's just such bullshit lies. You just would never really know what's going on. We'll really never know. I mean, it's just impossible to know. And for the most part, you know, when you hear this stuff about these different countries, when you go there, it's completely different than anything you'd ever imagine. You know, people are pretty friendly almost everywhere. People just want good lives. They just want to live a good life and you know, be comfortable and, you know.
We're all the same.
And I've always been treated really well, no matter where I go. A lot of people are quite surprised to see an American, some of the far off places I've been. And, you know, they're usually really curious. And, I've never been mistreated. And I've met some really fine people all over the world. So, you have to really take everything you read. Because, I mean, there's always, obviously, it's not outright lies in the media, the newspapers and the news. But it's usually exaggerations. Or they're just fed stories by, you know, like the CIA or whatever, whoever it is, that you're only getting what they want you to hear. Believe me, the news is greatly filtered and people have to approve it. And by, you know, by the time you see it in the paper or you see it on TV in the news, you pretty much better believe you're only getting like a very partial version of the story. And you're never getting the other side.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hit you with one last thing. So we've been on here for, I don't even know how long.
An hour and 32 minutes.
Okay. Well, this will get divided into two segments on the website for easier consumption.
Very cool.
You've obviously been all over the world. You don't really have a home base, correct?
I do not. I'm what's referred to as a nomad. I lead a nomadic existence where I basically move from place to place, and I'll stay for anywhere from a few days to a few weeks. Occasionally, I'll stay for a couple months. One place I like to stay a prolonged period of time is Sydney, Australia. The other place is in the Hawaiian Islands, either Honolulu or on Maui. I stayed in Lahaina last winter. I may go to Paia this winter. But There's certain areas that I like to stay. I love New York City. I love to stay in the Big Apple for a few weeks each year. So, but for the most part, it's every few weeks or so I'm moving on to the next place.
Well, obviously, you have had to limit your possessions based on that.
I'm a minimalist by nature. My workout programs are minimalist. If you notice, my diet is minimal, very simple. And I've got my possessions down to one bag. It's a 65-liter bag, which is about, 24 inches wide by maybe 36 inches long and 16 inches deep. And that's it. Just this one duffel. It has straps I can carry it on my back. I hate those roller bags. Try using a roller bag in cobblestone streets, or try dragging a roller bag in snow. Or try going from one train to another quickly with one of those dorky roller bags, you know? I like something I could strap onto my back. But it doesn't look like one of the typical, you know, backpack things. It's specifically made for travel. And if the bag feels heavy, then I figure I have too much stuff. And I'll tell you, you're really in touch with your earthly possessions when you carry it on your back. I mean, you really feel the weight of your possessions on your body, literally. Most people are owned by their things, you know? They work jobs basically they really don't like that much, to buy stuff that they don't really even need. And then they have to maintain the stuff once they get it, and they're worried about upkeep on it. So they end up basically running their whole life, you know, working a craptastic job that leaves them feeling kind of depressed about themselves, buying all this stuff that they don't really need at all or ever even use. A lot of it just gets stored in closets and attics and garages. And their whole life is maintaining stuff, possessions, materialism. That's the U.S., basically. That's the whole thing, man. You know, the cars, the TVs, you know, your house, your mortgage, all this stuff. You know, we were always told that, you know, the great lie of home ownership. It's not a joyful thing. It's a major stress in a person's life. Owning a home, paying those taxes, property taxes, school taxes, you know, all that crap. It's so much better to be completely free. I can go wherever I want in 1 second. If I decided right now I don't want to be here, I could go right now, put my stuff in my bag in about 10 minutes, not even, 5 minutes maybe. I could take a taxi to the airport and buy a one-way ticket anywhere in the world right now. That's freedom, my friend. I couldn't do that when I owned a home and when I owned a gym. I was stuck. And, you know, I couldn't even take a vacation when I owned that gym. So, I mean, like, every time I go on vacation, I lose customers, you know? You know how that is, man.
Yeah.
People get out of the regular routine. You come back, they don't come back. That's it. You know, once they stop, it's like, oh, my God, you know? Got to get Joe or Susie or Billy back into the swing of things. It's really hard once you go away. And now I develop my freedom business online. I do online personal training, fat loss programs, conditioning programs for people of every walk of life, from high-level athletes to just regular businessmen, businesswomen, stay-at-home moms, so forth. And so I can make money anywhere in the world.
Okay, you just brought me back to a question that I meant to ask that I forgot about when you said training high-level athletes. How'd you get a gig like training DEA and FBI agents?
Well, I had a pretty good reputation in the jiu-jitsu community. And at that time, Brazilian jiu-jitsu was like highly sought after with law enforcement and military. It was actually the official martial art of the Army Rangers and the U.S. Army for a while. And because it is so effective, and it's very, very, it's actually fairly easy to learn as well. And I had developed a good reputation there in Philadelphia. And there was a FBI office right literally just two blocks away from where I was at in Center City, Philadelphia. My gym was right next to the Independence Place. Independence Hall, where the Declaration of Independence was signed, and from the Liberty Bell. And right there was the federal building where the DEA had their main offices, the FBI, the local FBI. And I also had a captain for the Philadelphia Police Force that I had known for years in Philadelphia, Jerry Gallagher. He worked for me as a part-time trainer. He just loved fitness and being around fitness. And he was actually a captain in the Philadelphia Police. So he got me a lot of connections. He was a really pretty cool guy. I really enjoyed working with Jerry for years. He worked for me as part-time as a trainer just because he liked to keep a hand in it for fun. And anytime I actually worked with the United States Secret Service, they have a team called the CAT team, C-A-T, CAT team. It's the counter assault team. They anytime there'd be any kind of terroristic threat amongst on members of Congress or the Senate or the president and his staff, these guys would be called in to as a first responder. They were like a paramilitary group that would swoop down in black helicopters, had their snipers in place. They'd wear the black ninja-looking outfits with the mask, and, they had all the latest equipment and so forth. So I actually had a chance to work with those guys, both teaching jiu-jitsu and also some fitness-related stuff as well. So, and they were just down the road. And they would always have so much money left over in their budget then each year that they had to burn up. Because if they didn't use it, the budget would be cut short the next year. So they would call me down, and give me a chance to make some good money working with some really fine, fine people. Some of the finest people I've ever met are, police, law enforcement, and so forth. So, it was always a lot of fun for me to work with groups like that. I worked with Pennsylvania State Police, the SEPTA Police, the Southeast Transportation Police System, also the United States Park Service. They have like an enforcement group that have arrest powers in U.S. National Parks and so forth. So I worked with those guys. So yeah, it was fun. I had a good time working with those guys, and I got the gigs mostly just through reputation. People just knew who I was. I've been around for a while. Yeah.
When I was looking over your stuff, I went, okay, a lot of professional athletes. Well, a lot of trainers out there, can claim that. That's not as big a deal as. And then I went, oh, DEA, FBI. Now, how do you pull that off? That's cool. That's very impressive.
Well, one of the directors for the local Philadelphia FBI was coming over to me for personal training and also Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and his son was also involved with my jiu-jitsu program. So that it was just a natural progression then to doing a clinic and a seminar for their guys.
Well, it is definitely a who you know world.
It certainly is. It's not always so much what you know as who you know. I mean, that is absolutely true. So even celebrity fitness people have to be looked at with a jaundiced eye. A lot of times the people that are out there in the forefront are really the least qualified, unfortunately. So just because I did all that stuff doesn't mean I'm any good. Sounds impressive on paper, but The proof is in the pudding, But, I've seen a lot of so-called celebrity trainers and high-level guys that work with these guys and that guy, this pro team, and they basically are pretty incompetent. They're really not that good at all. So, it always sounds good on paper, though.
Yeah, well, let's
look. Of course, like anybody else, I'll use it because that impresses people. But if you want the truth be known, it really doesn't mean much.
No, but it is an attention getter. It definitely is. And the ultimate answer is to take one of your seminars or pick up some of your videos. That's something I want to touch on since you were talking about your website and the online training. I was looking through the collection of downloadable videos that you have, and I want to say that I'm impressed that you're not trying to rape people financially. There are certain other kettlebell gurus out there that just charge insane money for their videos, and I'm looking at yours and all these $10 downloadable videos. Wow, anybody can afford these. Buy as many, buy as few. And obviously, you buy one, you like it, you're going to buy more. But, I mean, there are videos out there, packages that, not going to mention any names, but certain industry gurus, you know, $40, $50, $60 for one DVD. It's just, it's brutal.
Well, I do this because I love it. And obviously, I do have to make a living, and I do have to make money. You know, I have to live like everyone else. But I don't want to gouge people. I want to give people a fair deal. I want them to go with one of my products and like it so much that they want to buy more. And I also want to make it good enough quality that they'll want to come back and buy stuff. You know, I'm always putting out new downloadable videos. I used to do DVDs, and I realized that I didn't want to be in the DVD business. It's just too much overhead, and, you know, you have to have a physical place to keep DVDs and to make them. I realized that, wow, the market's really downloadable stuff that people can download on their iPad, the iPhone, in the form of either an app or a video, or watch it on their laptop and, you know, take it with them wherever they're at and just set up their laptop and look at it and do the follow-alongs or the, you know, the tutorials. And, yeah, you're right. I want to be fair. I want a fair deal. I'm not out to gouge people at all with prices. And so I try to make things that I would want to buy. And I try to price them in a way that, hey, this is something I'd buy.
That's the way I tried to approach things. I owned a gym for many years, and I used to promote bodybuilding competitions. And I'd promote my show and plan my show in a way that, all right, if I just spent $25 to sit in the audience, am I being entertained? And just what you just said makes so much sense, and it's something I don't think a lot of people take into consideration. Would I buy this from myself?
Yeah, well, that was the whole thing for me. Would I buy this? If I saw this advertised, would this be something I would like? And I don't want to sell anything that I wouldn't buy myself or that I wouldn't buy. Or at least maybe in the past, you know, would have bought.
Oh, my God. I hear some integrity out there.
Well, I think it's really important, you know, to have integrity. And I think it's really important to you know, be a more moral, ethical person when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I hate some of the clowny stuff going on in the fitness industry these days. There's just so much hype. And like we said earlier in the interview, you know, there's nothing magic. There's no secret routines. There's no secret diets. I mean, if truth be known, there is really quite simple. It really comes back down to the basic elements of training. You know, you don't need a lot. All you really need is your body, you know, to be really fit and healthy and strong and muscular. You don't need much more than your body weight. And, you know, if you're going to use equipment, it doesn't have to be fancy. Just a simple barbell, you know, a couple of dumbbells. Kettlebell, if you like. I mean, kettlebells can certainly be a great training tool, you know, but it doesn't have to be exotic. And for sure, it doesn't take a lot of time either. I mean, people think that you have to be in the gym, you know, all the time to get the, you know, some of the physiques and so forth that some of these guys are getting. It's just simply not true. You can develop to your full genetic potential with just 2 weekly workouts. Just check out anything by Mike Mentzer or Casey Viet or you know, Dorian Yates or some of these guys. I mean, some of these really high level bodybuilders. They were training only a couple times a week.
Well, it's minimalism is the current trend, and it's kind of the reality of things, because I have recognized the fact that I can't train 4 or 5 days a week. When I cut back to 2 or 3 workouts a week, I like my workouts more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's you just can't recover. And as a person gets, here's a little understood principle in fitness. The stronger you're and more fit you become, the harder it is for you to recover. The reason why a beginner can train more than, let's say, an advanced person is a beginner isn't capable of pushing themselves systemically. Their muscles are relatively undeveloped. So whatever muscular work they do doesn't overtax or overburden them systemically, their kidney, their liver, their endocrine system, and so forth. So they can bounce back pretty quick because they're just not capable of really driving themselves. But as you develop your strength, it becomes stronger and stronger. It's not unusual for some people within a year and a half to 2 years to have tripled their strength from where they started. At that point, their muscles are big enough, powerful enough, strong enough that it really does drain them systemically. So it actually takes longer for an advanced man to recover than a beginner. And everyone has that backwards. They think that you just need to keep adding more and more and more volume and train more and more and more because you're advanced. But nothing could be further from the truth. The true advanced men, they will train much less. Now, obviously, there's, you know, anabolic steroid users. The drugs throw the whole thing off. People that are taking steroids, they can train much more often because they recover more quickly. But people that are training naturally, drug-free, they can't train that often. You just can't. And that's another problem. Some people become what I call a gym rat. Their lives are so meaningless that the only time they feel good about themselves is in the gym. So they just want that feeling of just working out all the time. And they will usually drift towards the performance-enhancing drugs because, you know, that's what their whole identification is based on, you know, being in the gym, being that gym rat. So those guys, you know, they'll be in there every day, twice a day, but it's totally unnecessary. If you're just an average person looking to be as healthy and fit as you are genetically capable of doing, you do not need to be training more than twice a week.
Okay, right there, you just knocked the number one excuse off from anyone who's listening to this. I don't have time.
The best results I ever had in all the years that I've been training people was 2 weekly workouts along with a strict diet. Now, that doesn't mean, when I say working out, that doesn't mean you're inactive all day. You don't sit in your butt. You know, you still have to be active. You know, you go out there, you walk the dog if you're a family person. You go play the kids and, you know, throw the ball in the park. I have daily what I call mobility drills where I work my joints through these very easy joint mobility exercises. And, you know, I walk constantly everywhere. You know, I like to jog now and again. But I don't consider that working out. That's recreational. That's just your daily maintenance stuff. So, yeah, I'm not inactive. And people that like to like have hobbies, like they like to play golf or they like to ride their bike or, you know, maybe they like to, you know, do ballroom dancing or you know, whatever. Whatever it is, bowling, swimming, you know, you get out there and do it. Play your tennis, play your hoops game if you're a basketball player or whatever. Be active. But as far as actually bona fide conditioning workouts, 2 a week has proven to be the best for most people most of the time. And there's research to back that up.
Well, I did an interview with Clarence Bass a few weeks ago, and he recently wrote a book with tons of documentation. It was an interesting book because it was nothing but research study after research study showing how much basically most people overtrain.
Yeah, well, Clarence, you know, I've been a lifelong fan of his myself. And he opted for the high intensity training model at some point. And yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You don't really need a lot of training in order to be really super fit.
Yeah, that again is part of the hype, I guess, that goes with the hype with the supplement companies. Because if we can't make it complicated and can't make it sexy, it's not going to sell.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So, you know, the whole idea that you need all this chronic training every day, you know, that's good for the gym owners. And that's good for, you know, the 24-hour fitness clubs and so forth.
You know, it really isn't, Steve. It really isn't, because unless you're a personal trainer, if I'm just a gym owner, I don't want to see you in there 5 days a week for 2 hours a day putting wear and tear on my equipment. I want to see you once a week.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. There are some gyms that they'll sell you a membership and they hope they never see it again. I mean, that's a lot of these big chain gyms. That's the way it works, you know. When I worked in a couple of these gyms as in the sales department, and it was real interesting, the whole psychology of gym membership sales. And, you know, the whole idea was to get as many people in there as possible, and hopefully you would never have to deal with those people or ever see them again. It was that's the whole basis for those type of 24-hour fitness and, you know, Bally's and I don't know.
I think if everybody
all the big chains, you know.
I think if everybody that was on the books showed up, there would be a very big problem.
I think so too. They're banking on the fact that you're going to buy that membership out of guilt, and then, you know, hopefully you'll never come in.
Yep, that's it exactly. I get the feeling you and I could talk for a very, very long time, so I'm going to wrap this up with, what else would you like to say, Steve, in closing?
I guess, well, we've said a lot. It's almost been 2 hours, I guess, now. It's
about pretty close.
Yeah, pretty close. So, yeah, I just really enjoyed having a conversation, Bill. You definitely cut from the same mold as myself, and I think we share a lot of commonalities and a lot of common interests and ideas. And I also like to, I really like what you're doing. I think that's pretty cool. You know, with the whole the whole idea of making things available for people that can't see. So, well, congratulations on that.
I appreciate that. What I'm really trying to do is kind of address not just blind people, but some people that most fitness sites tend to ignore. I'd like to do something with some wheelchair athletes. And I really like focusing on the longevity and the guys like Clarence, you know, who's in his mid-70s and still going. And you and I'll do one of these in 10 years when you're, you know, in your 70s.
Yeah, well, I plan to keep going, man. I was a big fan of Jack LaLanne and, you know, that whole era. And, you know, I've done a lot of reading about longevity and you know, I'm in it for the long haul. But, you know, it's not just about living a long time. You know, that's relatively meaningless. A long life of having never done anything is pretty dull, and it really doesn't mean much. You know, I would like to be one of these people that had actually accomplished some goodness and done some good things for his fellow man. And hopefully by leading by example, I can help influence others. No one wants to spend the last 2 or 3 decades of their life in a broken down, sickly condition, in a wheelchair or with a walker, and just basically suffering that last decade of their life. You know, I'm hoping to go hopping and skipping and sprinting, you know, right up until the end. And whether it be 72, 82, or 92, or 102, that actually doesn't matter. I'm looking for the quality of life. Whatever years I have, I want to be able to enjoy those years without being saddled with degenerative diseases and breakdown. So, you know, I'm hoping just to go to bed one night and just not wake up, just like Jack O'Lane, you know?
Well, it's back to the quality as opposed to quantity again, and that is the way to go. Close your eyes and no suffering. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people live longer today just because of modern medicine, and we keep them alive. But that's another another whole. We could do an hour on that. So
we could do an hour on that. So yeah, I pretty much said everything I had to say this time. And once again, thank you for having me on your show. It was a real pleasure. And the website is MaxwellSC.com. MaxwellSC.com. It's the SC stands for strength and conditioning.
Well, I will put a link on the page for this interview, and I will also add you to my links page on my site. And I really appreciate you taking all the time, and I appreciate Teresa with the emails back and forth. And I will definitely talk to you about possibly finding a way to do something down here the next time you're going to be in the States for an extended period. Can't afford a ticket from Oslo.
Next time, next year, save your pennies.
Absolutely. Okay, and this is Bill with Kosiaba Fitness, and we've been talking to Steve Maxwell for the last 2 hours, give or take. And thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye now.
Bye.